Hey everyone, welcome to M2F Story. Today I am going to share with you A Feminine Favor for My Girlfriend Part 3, written by Valentina Michelle Smith. I guess it's not one of those apples. Okay, then what you need to do is play the solitaire game for a few minutes every day. That will give you all the practice you need with using a mouse. Do you mean it? Like, is it really that simple? It sure is, I said. That's how I learned. Oh, wow. I just thought that game was there for fun. Thanks, Allie. I'll give that a try tonight. We finished our soup and salad and decided to walk back to the courthouse together. I made a quick stop in the ladies' room to touch up my makeup before we left the restaurant. We had about an hour to kill, so we did a little window shopping. There was a Gap store along the way, and Donna insisted that we stop in. Donna started looking at clothes, and I started to panic again. I felt safe enough when I was shopping with someone who knew my secret, but shopping on Femme with a stranger was making me nervous. We looked at a few tops and some pants. Now I have never worn female pants. I get enough of that in boy mode, thank you. But I managed to find a pair of blue flares that I thought might look good, especially with a coordinating top. I found a beautiful gold tunic top that complemented the pants quite nicely, tried it on, and bought the pants and top. Donna found a nice pair of cargo pants and a satin top. We walked back to the jury lounge with our shopping bags in hand. We weren't there more than 10 minutes when the jury clerk emerged from her office. Once again, we had to clear three rows of chairs and listen for our name to be called. This time I was number 20. Donna was number 23. We were again chaperoned into a courtroom. We were told that this was a civil case and were cautioned to turn off any beepers or cell phones. I also turned off the chime function on my new Geek Girl watch. This courtroom was like the first, airy and well-lit, with a curious mix of old and new decor. The judge was a pleasant gray-haired fellow with a furrowed brow. He introduced himself and the attorneys and explained the case to us. This was a malpractice case. The plaintiff was suing two dentists for pain, suffering, and other damages. We were asked if we had any problem either listening to descriptions of dental procedures or in looking at pictures of procedures. We were cautioned that the pictures might be bloody. Several jurors raised their hands. I didn't. The human body with its myriad functions is in no way offensive to me. I was always the kid who volunteered to dissect the frog in biology class. A few more questions were asked. Do we know the attorneys or any of the witnesses? Do we think the testimony of a dentist would be more believable than the testimony of a different witness? None of the questions asked made me raise my hand until the plaintiff's attorney asked, "Does anybody here think that there are too many lawsuits filed?" My hand went up. The judge asked me, "Juror 20, do you think that this opinion would affect your impartiality in rendering a judgment?" I rose. "I don't believe it would, Your Honor. It's true, I think there are too many lawsuits, but I can't say that this particular one is frivolous or excessive. I would have to look at the evidence." "Thank you, miss," the judge said. "You may be seated." None of the other questions asked applied to me. The attorneys took their notes up to the bench and conferred with the judge. They spoke for about 10 minutes. The attorneys then retired to their respective tables, and the judge spoke. "Ladies and gentlemen, we have picked our jurors and alternates. Please don't take it personally if you were not chosen for the jury. Our goal here is to find as impartial a jury as possible. As I call your name, please come up and take your seat in the jury box." The judge called out names. He seemed to be going in numerical order. Seven jurors had been picked and took their seats in the box. Then he called out Allison Gross. I almost forgot to stand. That was I. I rose almost automatically and was halfway to the jury box when the panic attack struck. This was something I never expected. I was picked for a jury. I managed to suppress the panic as I made my way to the chair and sat down. The chairs in the jury box were comfortable, padded chairs. They were on a swivel pedestal that was bolted to the floor and turned completely around. I was taking in everything when I noticed Donna was seated next to me. After we were picked, the judge called a recess and we filed back to the jury room. The tip staff, a grandfatherly sort of a gentleman, guided us back to the room. "Have a seat," he said. "This will be your home away from home for the next few days." There were 14 chairs in the room. On the table in front of each chair, like a seating place card, we found a juror's badge. You will have to wear the badge whenever you go into court. Do we take them home? Donna asked. No, you have to leave them here. Just be sure to pin it on before court convenes. When do we have to be here? I asked. Court convenes at 9:30 a.m., so please be here by 9:25. We can't start without you. The tip staff then passed some information sheets around. If, for some reason, you can't make it on time, please call one of the numbers on this sheet. And it had better be a good reason. The judge is a fair man, but he expects you to show up on time. A number of other things were explained to us. We could expect court to last until 12:30. Recess until 2 Osnier for lunch, and then continue to 4:30. Donna looked over at me. Looks like we're going to be together for a few days, Allie. Maybe we can do lunch together. Another woman who seemed to be wearing a riding outfit said, Could I join you girls? I like company for lunch. By the way, my name is Margie Davis. Sure, Margie, Donna replied before I could protest. Before I knew it, a regular lunch posse consisting of 5 girls, myself included, had been formed. Yet another panic was starting when we were called into the courtroom. The tip staff showed us the proper protocol for filing back into court. We took our seats and the judge addressed us. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for being on a jury. I know this is a nuisance, but our system of justice would never work without folks like you. By serving on this jury, you are making possible a system of justice that is fair, impartial, and above all, peaceable. This service is invaluable to a free society. Now I want to let you know just how a civil trial works. First, the attorneys for the parties in this case will make opening statements. Then they will each offer evidence to support their case. Finally, they will sum up the case in a closing statement. After the case is presented, I will give you instructions about the pertinent law in this case. Then it's all up to you. At this time, we have one little duty to perform. Please take one of the Bibles at the front of the jury box, and the clerk will administer the juror's oath. There were 6 Bibles, so we had to share. The court clerk, a woman with a nasal twang and a South Philly accent, read the juror's oath to us, which we repeated. I don't remember exactly what was in it, but I believe we swore to be impartial and fair. After this was done, the judge spoke again. It's late, so I'm going to adjourn court for today. Tomorrow you will get to see the justice system in action. Have a good evening, and I'll see you tomorrow at 9:30. Court's adjourned. The clerk banged a gavel, and we all filed out of the courtroom and back to the jury room. We asked the tip staff what we could have in the jury room. Some of us wanted to bring food or coffee. Anything you want within reason, he replied. We want you to be comfortable. We were each handed a check for that day's jury pay, $9 plus mileage. The pay for all of the other days we would serve would be mailed to us after the trial. I gathered up my purse and remembered to leave my badge on the table. Donna said, Well, I'll see you tomorrow, Allie. Okay, Donna. See you in the morning. I'm bringing donuts. Sounds good. See ya. As we were leaving, curiosity got the better of me, and I asked the tip staff one more question. Excuse me, but just where does the term tip staff come from? The tip staff smiled. It's an English term. Bucks County is one of the oldest counties in Pennsylvania, actually one of the 3 original counties founded by William Penn. Many of our legal terms come from the old English court system. Tip staff refers to the long staff with a brass tip that was once used to keep the jurors awake. In most courts, my job is called bailiff. I laughed when I heard it, and the tip staff chuckled as well. No doubt he enjoyed telling that story. Well, I'll see you tomorrow, I said. See you tomorrow, miss, the tip staff replied. I made my way through the corridor maze out to the main hallway. Down the hall, I found the elevators. I pushed the call button for an elevator. A bell announced the arrival of an elevator car. It was occupied by 2 women and a man, all dressed in dark suits and carrying briefcases. From their conversation, I assumed they were lawyers. I pretended not to hear them as the elevator made its descent to the main floor. The doors opened and we emerged. A few people had gathered by the elevators awaiting a car going up. I made my way past these folks and followed the signs to the main entrance. This time I made a mental inventory of the various landmarks I would use to find the jury room tomorrow. I walked outside, once again passing the smoker's gauntlet, and crossed the street to the parking garage. The crosswalk between the courthouse and the garage is clearly marked, and signs require drivers to stop for any pedestrians. I walked across, glancing at the cars, when I noticed that the driver of the van stopped at the crosswalk was checking me out. At least, I thought he was, as he seemed to be staring at my legs. Then we made eye contact. He seemed embarrassed. I gave him a little wink to let him know I wasn't offended. Then I proceeded to my car, grinning like the Cheshire Cat. That anonymous driver didn't know it, but he had just made my day. I felt on top of the world as I drove home that afternoon. I was really proud of myself. I had passed as a woman for an entire day, and even in the company of genuine genetic women. Not once was my womanhood challenged, nor was my manhood detected. I slipped a CD into the player and enjoyed the new age sounds of Enya while I drove home. It wasn't until I was safely at home and had kicked off my high heels when the reality of my situation truly hit me. I was going to have to pull off my act for at least 3 more days. I managed to fight down my panic by answering my email. There were several messages from Allie, all very playful and loving. I picked up the phone and called her in Wiesbaden. We talked for nearly an hour. Damn, it was good to hear her voice. I didn't tell her about my jury experience. To tell the truth, Allie did most of the talking. She had a lot to share about her new job, and I was always a patient listener. After the call, I undressed and treated myself to a good long bath. Our bathroom is almost decadent, including a high-tech shower and a whirlpool tub. I set a bottle of Yuengling Lager next to the tub, opened my new Tom Clancy book, and settled in for a relaxing soak. The next day, I slept in. I didn't have to be in court until 9:30, so why rush? I took a nice long shower, remembering to shave my legs and armpits, shaved my face extra close, and enjoyed a leisurely breakfast of poached eggs and coffee. My hunger satisfied, I proceeded with my beauty regimen. Today I was going to wear the dark gray suit with the creme blues. Once again, I slipped into my panties, pantyhose, bra, breast forms, half slip, and camisole. I had less trouble with the pantyhose today. I must be getting used to the nails. I put my face on at the vanity, checked my nails, and put on my blouse. This blouse had a plain front with a planché covering the buttons and a large visible gold button at the neck. It went very nicely with my skirt and jacket. I put on my gold hoop earrings and an amethyst brooch that went nicely with the suit, and stepped into my matching gray pumps. I gave myself a final inspection as I pinned my wig in place. Satisfied, I made my way to the garage, started my car, and drove once more to Doylestown. The drive was definitely less hectic. Most of the rush hour traffic had made its way to wherever it was going. I stopped briefly at the Dunkin' Donuts drive-thru to pick up a dozen donuts and a box of munchkins. Then I made my way to the municipal garage. The garage is a 3-layer affair. Entering from next to the courthouse puts one on the top layer. I had found a bottom floor entrance on the other side of the garage, so I made my way there. Inside, I found an abundance of spaces, since most people start on the top floor. I congratulated myself on being so darned clever as I slid into the parking space and turned off the ignition. My organizer purse with all of my accessories was slung over my shoulder, and I was carrying my industrial-sized travel mug and the donuts and munchkins. I was alone as I made my way to the elevator. The door opened immediately when I pressed the button. I was the sole passenger as the door closed and the car lurched upward. It stopped at the second level, the door opened, and a man stepped in. I recognized him immediately, and he recognized me. "Cindy, what are you doing here, and why are you here as Cindy?" he asked. I might as well explain. The man was a friend of mine, an attorney, and a member of my support group. His name is Jack, and in respect for his privacy, I won't reveal his last name. "Jack?" I said. "What a surprise. I didn't expect to see you here today." "Neither did I," he said. "And especially not on Femme. What gives?" "Well," I said, sort of stammering, "it's kind of complicated." "I'll bet," he answered. "I'm here for jury duty. Actually, I'm here for Allison's jury duty." And I explained the events of the last few days in brief. At the end, he was just shaking his head. "Cindy, do you have any idea just how much trouble you could be in? Well, I guess I might be thrown off the jury." "That would be the least of your problems. Forgery, deception, perjury. Cindy, this could be serious. If you get caught, you could do time." Now I was in a real panic. What do you mean, due time? When you took the juror's oath, you represented yourself as Allison Gross. You are not she. That's a lie under oath, which is perjury. Oh no, what would happen if I was discovered? At the very least, I might expect the judge to find you in contempt of court and fine you. I wouldn't be surprised if he put you in jail. And you would definitely be dismissed from the jury. My panic continued. You won't say anything, will you? I pleaded. Cindy, I'm an officer of the court. What do you expect? Please, Jack, please don't turn me in. Jack looked a little frustrated, but finally said, No, I won't. But if you get caught, don't ask me to defend you. I won't, Jack. And I won't get caught either. Jack looked at me with a little disbelief. Well, all right. I wouldn't want to get one of my sisters from the support group into any hot water, but watch yourself. I promise I'll be careful. Oh, and if you see me again, remember to call me Allison. Sure, whatever you want. By the way, you look really great. He made a little wolf whistle. I smiled. Now, counselor, I said, don't go making any inappropriate remarks. I'm sure I could find a lawyer here willing to sue your ass. We both laughed and walked to the courthouse together. Jack paused at the ashtray to indulge his addiction before entering, so I said goodbye and headed up to the jury room. Most of my fellow jurors had arrived, and the table was covered with goodies. One of the guys had brought bagels and several tubs of cream cheese. Donna had brought in a stash of Hershey's miniatures and Kit Kats. Another fellow was setting up a coffee pot to brew some Java. I set my donuts down and greeted everybody. We were having a pretty good time while we waited for the rest of the jury to arrive. Donna was dressed a little better today. She was still wearing pants, but they were a nice pair and coordinated well with her top. Her hair was brushed nicely and fell to her shoulders. She was also wearing a little makeup today. In all, it was a definite improvement over her appearance yesterday. And the change in her attitude was also noticeable. Hi, Allie, she said. Ready for jury duty? I guess so, I said, sitting down next to her. I've never been on a jury before. I'm curious as to just what happens. Well, I have to admit, Donna said. I am too. At least I'll be doing something for real and not wasting time like I was yesterday. Margie, the lady who had worn a riding outfit yesterday, chimed in. I was on a criminal jury a few years ago. It was for an assault case. Some jerk beat up an elderly shop owner. It was terrible. Really? I said. Oh my goodness, yes, she replied. And to see that horrible man sitting with his lawyer dressed so fine and looking so angelic. We found him guilty. Gee, my kids were asking me if I was going to send somebody to jail, said Donna. I told them that it was a lawsuit. I tried to explain it, but I don't think they understand. Maybe they shouldn't, said an older woman, Barbara, who was also in our lunch posse. I don't think kids should be exposed to such things. You mean lawsuits? I asked. No, she replied. I mean lawyers. We all had a good laugh over that. Then Barbara asked, Do you have any children, Allie? Oh, no, I answered. I'm still single. Is that an engagement ring? She asked, referring to my cubic zirconium ring. No, it isn't. It's just something I bought myself. It's not a real diamond. Oh, so you're not engaged? Well, I said, sort of hesitating, I'm in a relationship. I guess you could say that I'm engaged. Do you have a ring and a date? Asked Margie. I beg your pardon, I said. I repeat, do you have a ring and a date? If he hasn't given you a ring and set a date, you aren't engaged. That's it for today. Hope you have enjoyed it. If you do, and then be sure to subscribe for more story like this. See ya.